Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, I'm Tom Gilson. Recently, Lehigh University biologist Michael Behe, author of Darwin's Black Box, The Edge of Evolution, and Darwin Devolves, sat down to answer some of the most common questions put to him about evolution and intelligent design. Here we collect three of those questions and Dr. Behe's answers.
Another question I get is, well, that flagellum is interesting and intracellular transport is interesting that you talked about in Darwin's Black Box, but that was 20 years ago. So what have you done for me lately? I mean, what are the new and exciting, irreducibly complex systems in life, in biochemistry? Well, they keep, rolling along. Every time you turn around, every week, every month or so, new and exciting and interesting systems seem to be published in the major science journals. A couple that that I think are particularly intriguing, there's one called bacteriophage T4. Bacteriophage is a virus, and viruses will infect cells, of course, and bacteriophages are viruses that infect bacteria. So they land on a cell, and they go into the cell, and they eat the insides of the cell in order to make or get energy and materials to make copies of themselves. Well, I don't know if you've ever seen a drawing of a bacteriophage, but it kind of looks like a lunar lander, some of them. It's got a top on it, and then a thin connection, and then these legs that attach to the cell. And what the bacteriophage does is it sticks the narrow part in through the cell membrane and injects the DNA from the cell into the poor bacterium that it's going to eat. Well, a couple of years ago, using a new technique called cryo-electron microscopy, people looked in detail at this mechanism, and it's like an automated syringe that as soon as the legs touch the surface of the cell, it triggers a change in the shape of the lunar lander so that it shrinks and goes, and the narrow part goes down in with a fair amount of force and injects the DNA. And it's not only cool in its own right, but you say to yourself, there are hundreds and hundreds of proteins involved in this, and they're all there to do one thing, to inject the DNA into the cell. So that's a swell example of irreducibility that wasn't known except for until a couple of years ago. Another kind of improvement or building upon an example that I talked about in Darwin's Black Box 20 years ago is another bacterium and its flagellum. There's a bacterium called MO1, which was isolated off the seas of Japan. And it has a flagellum that spins about 10 times as fast as a normal flagellum and allows this bacterium to really whip through the water. And there's a prominent Japanese group that looks at flagella, and they looked at it by electron microscopy and some other techniques. And they saw that, in fact, in this tail that the bacterium has, there were 7 separate flagella all packed together. And they all rotated at the same time in order to push it forward. But if you think about it, you say, well, if this is rotating this way, and so is this, they'll knock against each other. They'll brush against each other, and the whole thing will come to a kind of a crashing halt. But the Japanese group showed that they don't actually touch each other, that there are other proteins that work as interdigitating gears. That is, there's like a gear between them so that as this rotates, the gear rotates in the same direction, and so does the other flagellum, so that they're all rotating in sync in the same direction. But with this separating gear, then it can, I'm sorry, it's a counter-rotating gear. With that, it can they can all spin together without bumping against each other. This shows a separate level of design. We had the flagellum that I talked about earlier. And here's something that is a really an improvement on it, an expansion of it. You couldn't pack flagella together and have them work. You needed from the beginning something to keep them separated from each other. So this system is another irreducibly complex one, and it's an example of design building upon design, the higher and higher and higher levels. And just one more example, or kind of a class of examples, is that the big news these days is that more and more control systems are being discovered in the cell, so that the control of things that the cell does is really exquisite. There are things called genetic regulatory networks that decide when to turn a gene on, or a suite or cascade of genes. And that's necessary because some genes are only expressed for a brief time during the life of an organism, and then they're turned off until, because their job is done. For example, organisms that are growing up, but then they start to enter, puberty or some other phase of life. And there are genes that have to be turned on and then turned off when their job is done. And that's especially true in the developing embryo. As an embryo goes from one stage to another, there are specialized genes that are needed. And if you look at the systems that control exactly when those go on and off, if you look at the, you can write them down as kind of this gene affects that gene and this slows down the other one, and it looks like a very complex wiring diagram. And genetic regulatory biologists, folks who study this for a living, have said, well, yes. And they said pretty much in so many words that this too is irreducibly complex, because if you don't have the whole system, it's not going to turn on at the right time. And if you get some of these steps wrong, you'll have a birth defect, a mutation, or an organism that is so badly formed it doesn't get born. Another question that I often, or another difficulty that I can encounter, is that some people, including some scientists, mischaracterize the argument for design, and they argue against the straw man instead of arguing against the argument that I put forward. And a good example of this was a number of years ago, there's a scientist at Brown University named Kenneth Miller. And he said why this irreducible complexity argument that Behe presents means that you have a system with a number of components, and none of the components can be used for anything else. It can only be used for what's for its purpose in that system. So if you think of, say, a mousetrap, then he says the spring in the mousetrap, according to him, can't be used for anything else, or the wooden platform can't be used for anything else. And he made a kind of a show of using the mousetrap as a tie clip, with the spring and the holding bar and so on. That was cute and all, but it was very misleading, because that's not the argument. You can, of course, use the pieces of an apparatus for lots of things. You can use it for a paperweight to weigh down papers so they don't get blown away, or you can use a mousetrap as a doorstop. The argument for irreducible complexity is not that you can't use the parts for other purposes. It is that if you take a part away, the system does not work. The mousetrap does not work. You may be able to use it as a tie clip without the holding bar that will hold the hammer in place until the mouse comes along, but you can't use it then as a mousetrap. Its mousetrap functioning is broken. And there's a number of other problems with that, but one of the big problems is, as I said, is that people mischaracterize, and there seems to be a strong desire to misunderstand these arguments. And one last problem, is that some people, including some scientists, say simply that they will not consider any answer that it does not involve just matter and energy. It's just materialistic. They will not consider purposeful design because they see it as pointing outside of nature. And you can't have a discussion with a person like that. And unfortunately, there's too many of those folks. And so they slow us up. And just one last question I get, perhaps because he's a prominent evangelical Christian, there's a man named Francis Collins, who is the director of the National Institutes of Health, a very good scientist who led the team that identified the cystic fibrosis gene. And he wrote a book a while back called The Language of God. And in it, he talked about what we've discovered in biology, and he was critical of intelligent design, and he proposed what's kind of loosely called theistic evolution. That is, God sort of knew what was going to develop, but he was not involved directly or in detail in saying how organisms might be built. So people say to me, you know, why are you not convinced by Dr. Collins's arguments? And it's interesting that if you read his book, he does say that that he's skeptical of intelligent design, but he does not even try to address the problems for Darwinian evolution that I and other intelligent design proponents have brought up. Instead, many Christians just think it would be neat, it would be the coolest thing if God would just make life this way by creating some general laws and then everything falls out from that. Well, maybe it would be cool, but my degree is not in theology, so I'm just a humble biochemist. So I have to look at what we discover and say, can that arise by random processes? And every indication says, no, that's very, very unlikely.
That was biologist and Discovery Institute Senior Fellow Michael Behe from his recent video series, Michael Behe Answers Hard Questions. Find the whole series where he fields additional hard questions at YouTube. Just search for Michael Behe Answers Hard Questions. Or check out his excellent recent book, Darwin Devolves. You can find it at Amazon and other booksellers. For ID the Future, this is Tom Gilson. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.